F1A. Number 23A.
Well, the moment one begins to think in terms of laws, I know that that is foreign to the Christian scientists in their field, in the field of spiritual things. And therefore, I'm always aware that it takes quite a bit to adjust oneself and get acquainted and familiar with thinking in laws. I've noticed that since the time that for the first time I have written these laws in the Minor Prophet, afterwards then I have shown them in the Epistles, and later then in the Oneness and a book. And it is always difficult when one has to see, when one has to adjust oneself to a new idea or to a new frame of consciousness. But we started out this week and seeing that we have to go forward and that we cannot stay always at the same point. So even if John Dolly has never taught laws, that does not mean that today, after another, 35 years, that we should not go forward and see that there is even a more simplified way how to train ourselves in the science of being. A law is naturally something that does not exist in being. We say God's law, just as we say God's wisdom. They are all symbols that help us to understand the one being. So also when we talk about the laws in astronomy or so, well, the stars don't know anything about the law. They have never learned the laws, how they should circle around the sun, how quickly, in which orbit, etc. They don't know anything about the law. It is we that try to understand how these stars move, say, around the planets, around the sun, and we try to catch it and put it into laws like Kepler's laws, to see how the universe can be explained to us. It doesn't have to be explained to being. Being doesn't need laws. So laws are a very fine instrument that help us to understand the mechanics of being, the rhythm of being, the dynamics of being, but they explain it to us. So everything that is of that scientific nature does not exist in being itself. We must see that, that they are translation from being to our human understanding and therefore appeal to the highest way of how we can think. Now, in all the times, in the magical age, in the mystical age, people were never thinking about laws. Even Moses' laws were not laws, they were commandments. We only afterwards called them laws, but they were not laws, they were just blunt commandments, thou shalt not. Only much later, actually only at the time of the Renaissance, one began to think in terms of laws in various sciences, especially in the natural science and the exact science. So the question is that thinking in laws is, especially in the spiritual field, a quite something new, a paradigm shift, and one must see that one is not putting up resistance against it, so that we are not the Jonah that wants to sidestep an advancing idea, just as he tried to sidestep it. We shouldn't go and buy a ticket to Tarshish and say, let's get away from that, or to to have that sense within ourselves, why something different, why something new, why not just some nice ideas, why not just some wonderful sentences, so that we feel at home and loved by divine love that meets all our human needs. Isn't that beautiful enough? And so on. We really have to see that what Mrs. Eddy discovered is a science. And a science demands laws. And if it demands laws, and the whole textbook is full of that demand for laws, we jolly well have to research and find out what these laws are. Now, we have the great advantage to be able to define those laws because we know the categories of being. We have been introduced into these categories of being. Mrs. Eddy has never said expressis verbis implicitly, explicitly, has never said explicitly what these categories are. She just indicated it by giving us capitalized terms and said, this is my terminology, these are my categories, those capitalized terms are my category, and so indicated that we may find them. We don't know if she knew it or if she didn't know it. That is a question mark. But she certainly left it to the future because she would see that the time will come when the science will be understood. So John Dawley came and gave us those categories, those three big categories, and showed that we can build on them. Now, today we can go on further and say, all right, if we state exact relationships between these categories, then we state laws. Therefore, our laws are all about the capitalized terms, no matter if it is the seven or the four or the four levels. That doesn't matter. Every time we state a relationship between these capitalized terms, we state a law. Furthermore, we must see that the law is always a generalization. Just take the law of gravitation in one small formula, very simple formula, is the law of gravitation stated. It's generalized there. It is generalized because it applies to all the millions and billions of possibilities where the law of gravitation works. So a law is a generalization. It is also, so to say, an abstraction. It is an abstraction, just as you have a formula like gravitation. It abstracts from the apple falling, from the brick falling. It abstracts from the moon and the earth having a gravitational force. It abstracts from the phenomena and tries to see just a generalization so that it can be applied to any circumstances, to any phenomena. So it is, we must see, that if we can define laws, that it is a, first of all, a generalization, then it is an abstraction, which means that an abstraction must be used afterwards in application in the individual case. So that then every individual case is one aspect or one way of this abstract law. Also, a further aspect of law is that it is a simplification. We simplify everything in order to bring out the core of something. So it is therefore a help for understanding. It is not making things more difficult and more complicated. It's just the other way around, that it is a simplification. Also, one can see that therefore, because it is a generalization, it is something that is universal, that applies everywhere. And so it lends itself for application by taking the generalization and translate it to a specific situation and apply it to a specific situation. So it is something very practical to have laws. I just wanted to enumerate a few pros of the laws to see the advantage of thinking in laws. Now, let's go back to our first law of Hosea and see if we can get the rhythm of this law of Hosea. Naturally, one is always helped when one asks, if one has such a law, and says, what is really the practical problem, or what is really the practical argument that is dealt with in such a law? Now, here in Hosea, the practical argument that everybody has within itself is always Hosea all through one's life. One has been a Hosea asking, well, isn't there next to God also another God, another cause, another law, another power? Is there not next to God good, a God evil, a power that is evil, a law that is evil? That's always a fundamental question. So instead of just saying, look here, no, there is only one God, and the Bible teaches there is only one God, and there is no God besides the God of Israel, and he is the only God, he is the God of heaven and earth, and he is the God of the whole universe. There is no other God beside it, therefore there is not another power beside it, and now you have it. That's a statement. It's a true statement. But it's so simplistic, not simple, simplistic, that it really doesn't contain very much as content of spiritual insight. But if I take that argument and try to put it into a simple law, which would state here that there is only one God constantly coming to us, to you, to me, to the universe, Romans 1, and that therefore there is no other God or no other cause outside that, that also can do something good or evil, then I've stated two elements of a general law. We have had that, Romans 1 and 2. But what does it imply? At the moment I have that generalization, I should say to myself, now let's elaborate it. Now let's see its implication. Instead of just having the law of gravitation, let's see how that applies to the relationship between the moon and the star, and why there are tides on the earth because of the gravitational forces and so on. Why does the brick fall down from the house and so on. So the elaboration, therefore, is the practice of that law. And as we have now a definite relationship of elements of the law, we can stay with those elements and go right through not only all the synonymous terms, but also through all the ideas of the synonymous terms. And suddenly you feel that that law has a terrific field of application. Yes? Therefore, I have given here some examples, and always at the end or so I say, but this is not the formula, this is not the only application, this is only example how to apply. Don't think this is the only way to apply that law, and therefore don't make it to a rosary, which you read down and just think, write down. No, it is just an example, and elaborate it with your knowledge of the ideas of the synonymous terms. All right, let's go to spirit and see how the very same law now applies to spirit. And we do that just in order to get into the rhythm, not so much for any other purpose. So if we take that same law and look at it from the point of view of God's spirit, then we see that God's spirit is constantly expressing himself. So here I have taken expressing himself, that the Christ. Christ is always the expression of the self-existent word. So I have here the Christ is constantly expressing himself as infinite. And now I must take an idea of spirit, namely substance, infinite development, and unfoldment. You know these terms as ideas of spirit. And now comes the element 2, Roman 2. No, I took more of it in this time. You see, I just went on and on. Spirit is constantly flooding. You have still element 1. Huh? Flooding is another term for the Christ comes to us. The universe with the fruits of spirit. The fruits of spirit. The infinite blessing of good. We know spirit is good. And now comes element 2. Therefore, matter, that's a counterfeit of spirit. Therefore, matter can never bring forth successfully true development or true fruits. A counterfeit of what I said above. I said spirit brings forth development and true fruits. The counterfeit of it, matter, cannot bring forth fruits and true development. You see, a very simple law stating the facts about the Christ, what he does, and then and the second element showing that the counterfeit cannot be true too. Or we go on and see spirit constantly translates itself to man and the universe. So I have taken another term for the Christ, translates itself constantly to. Can you see how many terms we can have for one tone for the Christ coming? I can say the Christ comes, I can say the Christ, it expresses itself, it manifests itself, it floods, it comes to us. Here I have translates itself to man and to universe. No matter what term I use, it must be a term that is tone-wise right. Must tone-wise be the Christ, huh? Yes, you look at me as if I would talk Chinese, or am I wrong? No, is it still English? Good. So spirit constantly translates itself to man and the universe as, now an idea of spirit is only reality. Spirit is the only reality. Another one as the purity of spiritual qualities. Again, another one, spirit constantly floods its universe with its infinite diversified reflection. You know, reflection as an idea of spirit. With faculties of good, an idea of spirit. With spiritual conception, spiritual birth, again an idea of spirit. And now must come Roman 2, therefore the counterfeit of spirituality and reality, materiality has no chance of conceiving anything real. Cannot bring forth the birth of something through the birth of something real. Cannot do that. So we have Roman 2. Is that clear? Can you see that there must be a consistency in it? You stay with the synonymous term. You stay with the Christ, attitude, huh? that synonymous term comes to us, no matter what term we use, it comes to us as ideas of that synonymous term, not as something else. So you have to take ideas of that synonymous term. And then comes Roman 2, which says the counterfeit of that synonymous term can therefore not do the same as the synonymous term has done with ideas of the synonymous term. Was that English? Good. Yeah. David takes soul. God, soul, is constantly pouring forth on man and the universe. See, I took another term, pouring forth. It's again something coming from God to us. I changed always as often as I could the wording, but not the tonality, so that one gets free from words, so that one doesn't say, well, you don't say here it comes to us. You say here it pours forth. Well, that's the same tone, different terms. So we hear the same tonality, that soul is constantly pouring forth on man and the universe. Now his ideas, his sinless nature, soul is sinless. Further, infinite satisfaction and blessing. That's other ideas of soul, satisfaction, blessing. True naming and identification. Again, ideas of soul. And now comes Roman 2. Therefore, material sense, which is the counterfeit of soul, cannot succeed in testifying truly. It cannot really succeed in giving us satisfaction, blessing, naming, and identification. It testifies not truly. It has always counterfeit names. And or you come to the next one. Soul translates itself constantly to you and to me, as a Christ, and to everybody, as what? As ideas of soul, freedom, balance, calm, safety, the balm of soul. Now Roman 2, therefore the very opposite of soul sense, namely sinful sense, cannot succeed in giving true and lasting satisfaction. Cannot bring us, therefore, freedom, balance, calm, safety, and satisfaction. So we just see constantly that we state something of the synonymous term, that has a Christ coming to us, bringing ideas of that synonymous term, and that's that. Therefore, Roman 2, the relative sense of it is, therefore, the opposite of the synonymous term cannot do the same, cannot imitate the same, therefore cannot do what soul or what the synonymous term does. We go further to principle until we get bored. All right. God principle. Now I take principle and say, how does it apply if God is principle? He constantly interpreted himself to his universe. Now I have said interprets itself. That's also a message from God to man and says, I tell you. Can you see, I'm completely free, so to say, in using terms as long as I stick to my tonality. So he comes to his universe as what? As ideas of principle, namely as system, government, divine authority. Therefore, Roman 2, the opposite of principle, material science, cannot succeed in governing man and the universe successfully. It has no true government in itself. Or another example of principle. Principle is constantly interpreting itself as what? Ideas of principle are harmony, unity, perfect relationship, spiritual agreement. These are ideas of principle. Therefore, Roman 2, the very opposite of principle, personal sense, cannot succeed in establishing concord or harmony or perfect relationship. The opposite cannot do what God can do. But that is always the argument. You see, that's Hosea. The belief in the universe. These are great, great beliefs in the universe that everybody has. That they accept, yes, God is quite a good old chap. He may mean well, but next to him there are evil powers at work, and there are other things that can do much better than God Almighty. That's Hosea. And we have to see, no, there is nothing next to God Almighty that can do also something as good as God can do it. Isn't that a fundamental problem in human consciousness since time immemorial, all over the place, that we have that dualistic sense that next to God there are other intelligence, another substance, another soul, another principle, other sciences, another life, material life, social life, political life, military life, etc., that there is always something next to mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love that can do also something right, or can also do something wrong, both of it. Isn't that a very general belief? See, so what we can do, we say, well, this is a belief. I don't want to have anything to do. Christian Science tells us this is a belief. It's not so. Full stop. Period. No, not full stop, period. This is too general. It's much too general. So we should take that generalization as in a law and elaborate it so that it applies to every angle of that belief. And we can always cover every angle when we go through the seven, because the seven cover the whole field of arguments. Yes.